Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Thursday, June 27th, 2019. We're in the home stretch of the week. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Glad to have you on. We have some interesting stuff to talk about with you today. Also with me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
You speak German.
Okay. One Bell is German.
In homage to Craig Ferguson.
Just for those...
He still speaks German.
To a still German, yes. For those playing along at home, just keep that in mind. So when you hear accents, it's because of the bell. It all makes sense, I assure you. Our first topic today, actually, John, I wanted to start with you and talking about saving the planet with a Mac.
Yeah. I was thinking about the evolution of the iPad, actually, and it kind of led into the use of, and I've been interviewing some scientists lately who use Macs, and it all kind of came together that, the Mac is still a formidable tool because of its Unix underpinnings and your access to the Unix underpinnings through the terminal window. And I started thinking about the evolution of the iPad, and I did a little short evolutionary history, and it seems like in order to amp sales, Apple is trying to turn the iPad into a Mac in some ways by adding mouse support and by adding file support and keyboards and a little bit of Microsoft Envy and trying to amp the sales. It's doing a reasonably good job. At least the sales are not on the decline anymore. But the thing is that as the iPad becomes more like a Mac, it's less capable than a Mac because you can't get to the Unix underpinning. And if you go to a scientific conference and you look at the computers that people are having on their labs at a conference, it's usually a MacBook Pro or maybe a Linux notebook because their supercomputers run Linux. Mm-hmm.
And so that's where they're spending most of their time is in that particular OS.
They're in a terminal window connected to a supercomputer hundreds of kilometers away or more. And you can install X11 if you want to. You can install Java if you want to. You have access to the Python and Ruby and Perl scripts. Even in the future, you'll be able to install those, even though they may be not installed by default. Mm-hmm. So you've got a really marvelous system tool that also is a great machine for publishing. It's got LaTeX support, and it's got Office. And so you can do all your scientific computing, and then you can do your email in Mac OS, and then you can do your publishing in the publishing app of your choice, and you can install Unix software. And then you look at the iPad is sort of inching towards looking like a MacBook Air, but without the Unix and scientific capabilities of a MacBook Air. And it's kind of weird what Apple's doing. And it seems to be in the name of sales rather than in the name of providing power to the user, because, the iOS and iPad OS are never going to open up. There are SSH apps on the iPad, but you can only go to another computer with it. Mm-hmm. You can't SSH into your own Unix subsystem and install Unix apps and so on. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of in the mood yesterday to kind of remind everybody that, the Mac is not going away. It, as much as the iPad's starting to look more and more like a Mac, it's never going to be a Mac. And I posted a little screenshot from WWDC in one of the sessions, or the security sessions, where they were talking about how, Gatekeeper and security provisions will clamp down on apps for the sake of user security. But those are the defaults. You'll always be able to work around it to the point where you can install. And here's the quote. You can always choose to run any software on your system. If you just know enough of a little minor wizardry, you'll be able to install stuff that you need to do your work. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird thing that Apple's doing. What do you think, Kelly?
Well, I think a bunch of stuff about this, to be honest. First of all, the thing I want to point out is that you mentioned interviewing scientists. And what John's talking about when he's talking about interviewing scientists is his podcast, Background Mode, where he talks to people about all kinds of different things. And he has talked to a fair number of scientists on that particular show. And it's always a really interesting interview. So if you get a chance, this is a plug for Background Mode because you should be listening to it.
Thank you.
Also, I feel like Apple is getting the iPad wrong. And I feel like, okay, I feel like there are a lot of people who want to do more with the iPad than they can do right now. And what they want is a little bit different way to access the file system, or a little bit different way to get other things done that they would normally have to have a laptop to do, that the iPad has the horsepower to do and the capability of doing, even though it doesn't have a keyboard or a mouse or whatever. And when people talk about the shortcomings on the iPad, what they want the iPad to do and how they want to be able to use the iPad, Apple is hearing that as turn the iPad into a computer. So they added mouse control, which isn't what anybody wanted. They just wanted a better way to, say, upload a file so that you can do an entire WordPress post from your iPad, right? Or whatever. Or be able to record audio so that I could record the audio that we have here separately in an application that's completely different from the one that we're actually using to talk to each other. So that, you know, Audio Hijack on iOS, for example, to go back to one of my favorite examples. Hi, Paul. He and I sort of kicked this idea around at WWDC in an interview I did with him.
Yeah.
And right now it's simply not possible because it's not possible to have Audio Hijack running and recording audio while you're in the middle of, you know, Skype or Discord or whatever else it is you're using. So,
sandboxing.
Yeah. So, like, that's what I want. And so Apple says, well, you know, I know that people want to be able to do more, so we're going to let you hook up a mouse. And I feel like that's completely misreading what it is that people actually want out of it. And I think that Apple's gotten real hung up on this myopic view of what the iPad is supposed to be.
For the sake of sales, mind you.
And that, like, that's why nobody's buying one. And that's not really why nobody's buying one, which is a whole other host of reasons. And part of the reason is that you made really good iPads and nobody needs one every 2 years, and they're not getting one free from the cell company every year. So Verizon isn't handing you one every 24 months like they used to do with an iPhone, which is why people aren't buying those as often either. Anyway, part of that, I think, is where the neglect has come from in, you know, like, there's been a lot of talk about who the pro user is for Apple anymore. You know, when we got the new Mac Pro, that was one of the things we talked about. And the first thing everybody thought of was computer graphics and visual effects. And science is a place where I think science is a field that got overlooked, because that is a place where a lot of people have outgrown the horsepower that they can get on a Mac and the limitations in whatever way that might be of a Mac. And that's where, you know, like you were talking about seeing people at conferences with Unix machines, because those can be upgraded in a lot more ways. And the hardware on that side is a lot more flexible because you can actually swap out hardware in Unix machines. So it's really easy to carry around a Linux laptop instead of something that's going to be limited, you know, plus they're less expensive. So when you run out of upgrade options, getting the new one isn't the crater in your budget that it used to be. So I think,
speaking of crater in your budget, I was pricing a new 12 inch iPad Pro the other day.
Yeah.
And if you get one with a reasonable amount of memory, like 256 gigabytes of storage, and by the time you had Apple Care, you're talking about $1,200, $1,300. You could buy a full-blown MacBook Air for that much money, and your screen would stay cleaner.
Right. Your screen is cleaner. You could buy a really nice bag to put it in. You know, you could get the laptop and an extra power brick.
Pretty nice portable Unix workstation.
Yeah. And a really nice, you know, go treat yourself to a Waterfield bag or something, you know, and and still come in under the budget for the iPad.
Think about all the things you can do on a MacBook Air or a MacBook Pro. You know, you can be running Linux in virtual machine, for example. If you need to be running Fedora, you can be running Windows in a virtual machine. I would recommend a MacBook Pro instead of a MacBook Air for all this heavy duty stuff. You can open up a terminal window. You can install your publishing apps. You can have Office. Mm-hmm. You got all your communications tools and FTP clients.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty cool set of tools that interoperate, and you can't do most of that on an iPad.
Right. Like, there's some stuff you can do, not a ton.
Yeah, some stuff.
Andrew, I know you like to spend a lot of time on your iPad, and I think you have the most mm-hmm. recent iPad of all of us. So, for you, how is it to try to get things done on your iPad?
Yeah, it's great. I can do pretty much anything on it now. I mean, I forget when it was, last year, a couple years ago, you know, Tim Cook did say the iPad was Apple's clearest vision for the future of computing. And I think the iPad's greatest strength is that it can be anything you want. If you want a tablet, just leave it as it is and maybe get an Apple Pencil. If you want a computer, you can now hook it up to an external monitor and get a mouse and keyboard for it.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of seems to me that Apple is positioning Macs more as specialized tools, whereas the Apple Watch and the iDevices are for everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
That's true, but when it's specialized and you need it, you need it.
Yeah, so that's why you get a Mac.
Yeah.
Right. But are you finding that, as an experience, using your iPad for what you want to use it for, has that... Like, I know you haven't spent a ton of time, like, you haven't had, like, all the iPads all along or anything, but do you find that it's a good experience? Do you find, like, there's holes in it, there's still stuff you have to go to your laptop for?
For me, it's for my needs and my workflow, it's a great experience. The only thing I still go to my Mac for is if I want to do things in bulk. Like, if I want to bulk rename files, I can't do that with shortcuts. I have to use Automator.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I can use my iPad for almost everything else.
You write your articles on your iPad, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the magnifying glass and the clumsiness of editing text?
It's a little bit clumsy, I think. But I'm also glad that Apple is adding more gestures in iPad OS. So I think that'll make editing and writing a bit easier.
Oh, yeah, it will. Finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the gesture stuff coming is hopefully going to be useful. I mean, that sounds kind of weird, but I hope that it gets there, because I think... there are a lot of opportunities for the iPad to do what people wanted to do, what people needed to do for their particular workflows. Not everybody is writing articles and posting them through a content system the way Andrew and John and I do. So there are people for whom that works, but there are also people who have big holes in that process for one reason or another. And, you know, and part of what makes that frustrating is that every time you get another step toward being able to do it 100, whatever it is, being able to do that 100% on your iPad because something new came to iOS, or there's a new feature that allows you to get around that limitation in a particular way, it just gets you another step, and then you're just like even closer but not quite 100%. And sometimes that almost feels worse than just leaving it at the kind of janky, gimped together old way that you had before. So, like, that's one of the things that's sort of frustrating about watching Apple try to take a shot at this is, you know, you can connect a mouse to it. Like, that doesn't solve any problem that I have or any hurdle that I'm trying to overcome in order to do more on my iPad than I do now.
I think there's a little bit of a consumer backlash effect here, too. You know, even though Apple's been trying to make the iPad more functional and more appealing to a broader range of people, there's some very serious technical problems facing the planet. You know, we have energy management, medicine research, new materials technologies, the science of understanding climate change, all these technical challenges that are facing our society, some of them brought on by ourselves and some of them, you know, just a natural part of the evolution of our society and the planet. Our grand challenges, you know, and we need powerful computers to deal with that. And I think Apple kind of felt like they were squeezing themselves out of that participation because Apple's so focused on recycling and green and its own energy production and treating the planet right and consciousness about the environment. It seems kind of counterproductive for Apple to kind of let the Mac drift away into oblivion while other people are doing the heavy lifting of all our science research with Linux and Windows. It just didn't make sense. I think the resurgence of the Mac in 2018 may have been a bit of reflection of that, about that thinking. We want to be players in this high technology game.
Yeah, this is my hope.
We don't want to lose our edge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope that that's what's happening, and I hope that it turns out to be something really interesting when we, you know, to pursue. And John, I look forward to more interviews with scientists where you talk to them about those new Macs once they get their hands on them, and maybe we can find out how much more awesome things are now that they've got new hardware from Apple that's helping them get things done.
I've got more in the wings. I've got a physicist who's an expert on string theory coming up soon.
Ooh. But they probably still won't have, clever that is, they probably won't have a new Mac Pro by the time you talk to them. That's what I want to know. When you start talking to scientists who have Mac Pros, I'm always interested in the science conversations, but I'm extra interested once they get their hands on new hardware.
I know one on the East Coast, but he's waiting for his grant money.
Ah, okay. Well, I look forward to that talk. Also, while we're here talking about topics we tend to like discussing here on Daily Observations, we're going to talk about ad tracking. And Andrew, you wrote up a piece about Mozilla and their tracking that was kind of an interesting approach.
Yeah, so they announced this new tool called Track This. Mm-hmm. And it's not really an ad blocking tool. It's just a way to make people more aware of, like, it just gives you a very visual indicator that, yeah, like, advertisers are tracking you and they're building up a profile of you. And so to do this, you download the tool, and you first have to open up 100 tabs. So you're going to need a pretty powerful computer for this.
Oh, geez.
Like, my poor aged Mac couldn't handle 100 tabs, I don't think. So I didn't actually try this. And so you pick what kind of profile you want ads to think you are. Mm-hmm. So there are hype beast, filthy rich, doomsday, or influencer.
Okay.
So you pick one of those profiles. You open up 100 tabs based on that profile, like what kind of things those people in that profile would be searching for and reading and looking up and all that. Mm-hmm. And so after you do that, you close all the tabs, you open up a new Firefox window, and then you just start browsing the web, and you should be able to start seeing ads targeted towards that profile, like if you're a rich person.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, yeah, it's a really neat concept.
Except for the 100 tabs part.
Yeah.
Well, I always have 100 tabs open, so for me this isn't going to be a big deal. But I think what's interesting about this is, you know, we've talked about, like, profiles and ad tracking and profile tracking before, and, like, what kind of information stays persistent, you know, whether it has to do with Facebook ads or ads on other websites where you go and read different stuff, and, you know, you look up a few things, and now that's all that shows up in the ads on the sidebar of whatever pages it is that you're visiting. And I like Mozilla's approach. First of all, I like that it's sort of fun, like, like, I can pretend to be an influencer if I'm using Track This, right? That would be great. I like the idea of sort of making it something entertaining so that maybe people will pay attention. And I also like the idea that they're drawing attention to this by virtue of making it something, you know, that is a little bit silly, you know, so that people will pay attention to it and see how that works. So I think I like where they're going with this. It is a thing that I would install and use. How about you, Andrew?
Yeah, if I had a more powerful machine, I would love to test it.
If you could get those 100 tabs open. All right.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll have to jump into that and report back. John, how about you?
I'm pretty well clamped down in other ways. I don't get a lot of advertising. So I'm happy with my state.
All right. What do you think of the idea?
I think it's great. I think I agree with you that it's great that Mozilla is, because they're independent and they don't have a skin in the game, can focus on our privacy instead of their agenda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Mozilla is a nonprofit, I believe. At least a piece of what they do is nonprofit, and they just sort of want to make the web as available to as many people as they can. So I'm for that. And I also like what they're doing with privacy and drawing attention to what it is that people are doing and what happens to your information and what you can do to maybe prevent some of that from happening. Anything that gives people more data about their data is always stuff that I'm for. And I'm glad we have a minute to talk about it. So I will install it, Andrew, and I'll let you know what happens.
Yeah.
I can keep 100 tabs open.
I've used Firefox. I don't really use it much anymore. But in the past, if I went to a image-heavy website like Pinterest, after about 5 minutes, my Max fan would start blowing.
Oh, yeah.
It's from 2014, I think.
Okay.
So it's getting up there.
Yeah. I can see where it would be hard on your machine. So, yeah. All right. Well, then that's definitely, to go back to our first topic, that's definitely a better experience for you on an iPad then. go to Pinterest. I would imagine that tends to be a little nicer anyway. Interesting. We'll see what Mozilla does next, and if I get this installed and up and running. I also don't primarily use Firefox, so I would have to spend a little time in Firefox and see how that works. But I am sort of curious. Maybe it'd be fun to live the life of an influencer for a while, at least in my web browser. We'll see how it goes. With that, we're going to go ahead and call it for today. So, Andrew, thanks for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John, thanks to you and your bell for being here today.
You're very welcome. Dracula.
Oh, yes. Dracula, blah. I've been your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.